And Trust Business Lunch on WGN is produced by Pete Zimmerman. On Mondays, we start the week with Elise Glink from thinkglink.com. She's the real estate and financial wellness expert. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
Let's talk turkey. It's something that Steve Alexander and I spoke about last week. What are you looking at in terms of numbers?
Well, we have a new survey from LendingTree that looked at the number of Americans who are planning to host Thanksgiving dinner this year. About half of them, 47%, are expecting guests. That's up quite a lot from last year, not a surprise, and up actually from 2019 as well.
I'm glad you said that because, of course, last year Thanksgiving was off the table, no pun intended. But if you say 2019, so we're actually, and maybe that makes sense too, because we're so anxious to get back together, right?
Well, I think we are, right? I know we're hosting some people this year, everybody fully vaxxed. Actually, most people now around the table will have had their third shot, so
wow.
The booster shot, which I think is really helpful, especially since we're starting to see COVID numbers rise again. And that's something that I know that the federal government is watching as they're trying to push through all of their different infrastructure bills and the Build Back Better and all the rest. But just to continue for a moment with Thanksgiving, because I think this is another thing that people are very worried about, how much it's going to cost to feed all these people who are around the table. LendingTree found that consumers are spending about $391 to host Thanksgiving. That's down about 18% from last year. But millennials are going to be paying more. They're spending $461, while baby boomers are spending $232. And I'm just wondering what the millennials are serving.
More wine. But do you think that, did they say how many people are at those dinner tables?
Yeah, typically about 10, which is interesting. Spending about $30-$40 a person on Thanksgiving dinner when turkey used to be one of the cheapest forms of protein that you could have is kind of interesting in and of itself. And so they're looking at about 10 people that people host to expect, and the average cook or host is going to be spending 9.6 hours prepping for the event, which honestly, that's a lot of pressure on people
it is. It's well on us, meaning you, not me, but you're doing all the cooking and prepping, huh?
I'm doing the cooking and prepping, but thankfully I have a lot of help this year, so I'm good.
You know, there's a disconnect between what we were talking about with Steve last week. Steve, you'll notice this, and what we're talking about today, because the Farm Bureau, what was the source on that? Said that
the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Yeah, said that the cost of the staples in the dinner. Steve, maybe you can finish this thought. What did that come to?
Up about 2. The final number is it's about $49.23 for a dinner for 10 people,
which is different than the $461. But you say, okay, turkey you can get for $20. I mean, dollar a pound's not uncommon. Bag of potatoes, bag of sweet potatoes, some rolls, some salad, some pie. You could feed people for less than 100, technically less than 50. But we will spend 10 times that amount is what Elise is saying.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I think it's sort of an interesting number. I mean, this is just, I don't know if this includes the hosts are paying for people's lodging. I don't know if it includes wine and spirits.
Does that sound high to you? I do.
It does. And you know what? It feeds into this narrative that we're hearing that, you know, Thanksgiving is going to cost you more this year and be prepared. It's going to be an overwhelming number. But, you know, I went and bought my cranberries and my sweet potatoes already, fearing more shortages than anything else. And I found them to be roughly the same price as they were, you know, last year and the year before. I so far haven't seen a big difference. Where I have seen a big difference, and I mentioned this to Steve Bertrand last week. I made a dinner last week for a family who the wife was just diagnosed with breast cancer. I've had two really close friends who have been diagnosed in the last week. Both curable kinds, which is great, but they wanted a home-cooked meal, and I went out and I bought her some skirt steak, and I noticed that skirt steak was priced 30% above where it was, I don't know, say 6 months ago, and I think that's what people are fearing with the Thanksgiving, you know, expenses, but I haven't seen that yet.
I noticed that on a flank steak, because we marinated a flank steak recently, and at the restaurant I was at, they had a little table square and it said the prices on the menu are wrong because the beef prices are so high, and the upcharge was on some cuts of meat $15. So yeah. The $30 steak was now $45 because they said the menu, the prices have gone up.
Yeah, I do think we are seeing extraordinary jumps in pricing, but I think it's for very specific things. And to your point, I think there are places that you can shop around and find all the things you need for your Thanksgiving table in a way that will make it fairly affordable for you compared to last year. And so that's actually good news. Some things that are not going to be such good news for people. We saw over the weekend, very quietly on Friday night, the government announced that if you are getting Medicare, it's going to cost you, I think, 14.5% more next year for Part B, which is mostly, they say, due to rising costs, inflation, but also the cost of that new Alzheimer drug.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that and some other increases in costs. We'll pick it up here in a minute. Elise Glink joins us on Mondays. I wanted to talk to you about the infrastructure bill getting signed today. But before we get to that, let's just finish what you were saying about Medicare. That's a pretty big number. The premiums for people on Medicare Part B are up 14% next year.
Yeah, 14.5%. They're increasing by $21.60 on a dollar basis. It's the largest increase in the program's history. And the standard monthly premium for Part B will now cost $170.10 in 2022, up from $148.50 in 2021. And they're saying that the reason for this is a lot of there's a brand new Alzheimer's drug, and the price is so incredibly high for that drug plus other general costs because of the pandemic that they needed this historic increase.
Editorial in the Tribune today said rather than passing along that cost, they should subsidize the cost of hearing aids for senior citizens. But wow, so one single drug is the driver on that. And then when we talk about inflation as kind of this academic thing, if you just take the three things we've talked about so far, the cost of meat, the cost of your Medicare payment, and the cost of a third one, which suddenly escapes me, but those are very real increases in people's pocketbook.
Yeah, they are. I mean, and I also think people are wandering around looking at gas prices. I know I, you know, passed by the gas station over the weekend and it was, you know, $3.75 for a gallon of gas. It's getting very close to $4. We're already in magic land territory where you start to get a price of a gallon of gas to a place where it really impacts people. And as you're planning for these driving trips for Thanksgiving, a lot of these are going to be on the road. And I'm sure next week we'll talk about, you know, how many miles people are driving and what that's going to cost. But, you know, as you're starting to plan for that trip, you're thinking about the cost of a gallon of gas and, you know, what that's going to run you as you drive, you know, across the country to visit family.
Okay, so on to infrastructure then. The president, I didn't watch it. Did he sign that today? That was the plan, right?
That is the plan. I don't think that I've...
2 o'clock. Pete just whispered in my ear. 2 p.m.
Okay. Coming up. So... that's all very exciting, except, and we're going to see a lot of really big numbers, $550 billion for transportation, broadband, utilities, $110 billion into roads, bridges, and other projects. To me, that's actually excellent. The last thing we need in this country right now are bridges falling on top of people, and we've certainly seen that movie. $66 billion for freight and passenger rail, including potential upgrades to Amtrak, and $39 billion into public transit systems, including some things for like the New York subway system, and I assume here in Chicago as well.
And we won't see the changes immediately. It's not like suddenly trucks are going to roll out fixing bridges. I mean, these are projects that will then have to be vetted and bid and contracts awarded. I suppose some of them are turnkey or shovel ready, but This is going to take place over several years.
It will. It's planning that the funding will go out over a five-year period, and it could take a while for things to start. But I hope that they're going to put some things on the fast track. So there's supposed to be $55 billion into improving water systems and replacing lead pipes. And what has gone on in some cities around the country, you know, thinking of Flint, Michigan, and some others, where, you know, generations of residents have been drinking out of leaded pipes, it's just not good. So I'm hoping that some of those projects get fast-tracked.
Ask some of the south suburbs if we need to upgrade the infrastructure of water in Chicago, and I think you'd get a big yes on that, too. One last thing, though. When you were talking about the increase in Medicare, et cetera, so that's – That's inflation for people, right? I wonder if, in fact, wages are going up as well. But if all of these costs keep going up, nobody comes out ahead. I wonder if anybody's got a score on that. Is the average worker or person, and I don't even know exactly what my question is, but I wonder if at the end of the year, with increased wages, if people are going to have more money to save or enjoy life, or is inflation going to eat up everything they've gained, you know?
Couple of thoughts there, John, and it's a great question. So inflation is up 5.6%. The average wages are up somewhere between 3 and 4%. 4% if you've jumped to a new job, 3% if you haven't. Those are very impressive wage gains. Mm-hmm. Inflation is running a bit ahead. On the other hand, the government has handed out a lot of cash over the last 18 months to help people get through the pandemic. And if you look at what people did with that cash, overall, families own balance sheets, right? The cash that we have in our accounts and savings is a lot higher than it was before the pandemic started. We now have, we're charging on our credit cards again, but for a long time we had paid down those credit cards, so our credit card balances were less. The one thing that I think we're going to start to see, and this is where it's going to pinch almost 50 million Americans, is that your student loans are going to have to start being paid again early next year. And that's really going to cause people, I think, to sit up and feel all of these costs put together.
That's the end of January, right? I think February 1st, forbearance
At the
ends.
Moment, that's where it is. It keeps getting pushed out, but they say that it's going to go forward and you're going to start owing those bills.
That's Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Visit thinkglink.com and let's talk next Monday. Thanks, Elise.
You're welcome, John.
I'm John Williams. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. Jim Dahlke, senior editor, Chicago Inno, joins us Mondays at this time. Kind of interesting. I didn't know that Oprah's favorite things is still a thing or how big a thing it is, but there it is, huh, Jim?
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny. Oprah's favorite things really, you know, still kind of stands out and carries a little weight, even though the internet gift guide industry is sort of a dime a dozen now, right? There's a gift guide in pretty much every corner of the internet. But Oprah's favorite things, I think because of the brand she's built, still sort of resonates with shoppers. And you'll see a Chicago startup, a part of her list this year. That startup is Tovala. It's a company here in Chicago that makes a smart oven and a meal delivery kit service. Their oven lets you scan a barcode from one of their meal delivery options, and it'll automatically cook that meal in about 20 minutes or less using a different combination of different kind of cooking methods. And you know, they've been operational for a few years here and have really kind of been working to gain some traction in the market and have grown really quickly. And you know, they think this is kind of the next step to becoming a household name.
I think the way they got it into Oprah's space is pretty clever, too. Talk about smart, sending one of the ovens to Gayle King, right?
That's right. So they sent an oven to King, and really during the middle of the pandemic, and you know, she said that it really kind of got her through the quarantine. And actually, you know, Tovala has heard that from a lot of customers, actually, who used the service during quarantine when a lot of restaurants were shut down. And you know, really, we're looking for kind of a contactless meal system. And you know, Tovala sort of is perfectly positioned for that. There's this countertop oven that lets you scan a delivered meal and cook it in 20 minutes. So it's a really no fuss, no mess cooking option, and really took off during the pandemic. But you know, they think that they've got some headwinds here even beyond the pandemic as people are looking for more convenient cooking options.
So somebody here in Chicago said, I got a good idea. Let's send one to Gayle King over at CBS in New York. It arrives there. She starts to use it. She talks about it. She tells her best friend, Oprah Winfrey. Oprah puts it on the list. Bingo! Good for them.
That's right. And they say they're already seeing a bump in sales due to it as well.
Okay, let's talk about $40 million to help dispensaries. I always have trouble pronouncing the name of this company in Chicago, Fyllo.
Yeah, this is Philo, a startup here in Chicago, and they do a marketing technology for cannabis. So what they've created is essentially technology that helps with marketing, both for you know delivering of ads, but also the compliance. The compliance is a very tricky thing in the legal cannabis space. Your ads have to be shown to users who are of age and who are within the legal state requirements, and there's a lot of compliance issues with cannabis marketing. And so they're really helping with that. And they've raised now $100 million to date, including a $40 million round. just last year, they raised $70 million in total, actually, throughout 2021. And they help cannabis dispensaries, you know, market their offerings to cannabis users. And the interesting thing about Philo, though, is they don't just sell their technology to cannabis firms. They also sell to mainstream brands like Uber Eats and Lagunitas Brewing Company, who want to get their message in front of cannabis consumers. And what they say is that they've seen revenue up 100% since the start of the year.
What is it? Different states have different rules. Do they use AI maybe to scan text and make sure it's compliant with the state it goes to?
Yeah, so it's very tricky, especially with, you know, online advertising. You know, a state, an advertisement that is legal, you know, to a viewer in Illinois may not be legal to somebody just across the border up in Wisconsin based on the legal marijuana laws. And so those companies are on the hook for pretty hefty fines if they are not compliant and they're not sending their ads, you know, to somebody who is within, you know, a legal state that can purchase legal marijuana. So what they're doing is kind of really taking the burden off of those companies and providing a system where, hey, you know for sure that the advertisement you're delivering is being sent by the intended person.
What does 3Kit do? This is another Chicago startup in your news.
Yeah, Chicago startup 3Kit is really interesting technology helping brands better showcase their wares online. Essentially, what they are able to do is help companies create these 3D product configurations that allow their customers to better visualize what they're shopping for. They work with brands, a lot of furniture brands, so you can think like Crate and Barrel, Steelcase, the California Closets, really allowing companies to create these immersive sort of augmented reality 3D product tours of different items on their website and give customers a better sense of what they're actually buying. So last week they raised $35 million, raised $65 million today. Got some pretty big backers. Salesforce is an investor in this company, actually former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Steve Young is an investor in 3Kit as well. So they see a big opportunity to kind of help brands continue to create better online experiences for their customers. And there's actually, believe it or not, a metaverse and an NFT play here for them as well. They think that as the metaverse gets up and running, companies will want to, you know, exist within the metaverse and show their products to people as they're living in the digital world.
One of the people you wrote that developed the software was involved in the special effects for Harry Potter and the Avengers. Are we talking about the same thing? Like, I was looking at a used car, and so I clicked on the dealer, and then I was able to, like, examine, just kind of drive a little cursor all around the interior and exterior of the car. I could go inside. I could look at the fabric on the upholstery to see if it was in good shape or not. I sort of did my own little tour of the car without having to leave my house. Is that what we're talking about?
That's exactly right. So they do that, but then there's another element of it as well where their software allows you then to, so say for a piece of furniture, for example, to use your phone and see what that furniture would look like in your home. So they're able to kind of like help with a lot of the sizing and spacing issues where if you're purchasing a couch, you can not only get a really close look at what the couch looks like, but also with your phone using AR, put it in your living room and see where it looks like, how close it is to your door, how close it is to your bookshelf, things like that.
Oh, really clever stuff. Really interesting today. As always, Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno. Thanks for your time, Jim.
Thanks, Sean.
Wintrust Business Lunch continues now with more business news and Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Just as the last Sears store in Illinois closed Sunday at the Woodfield Mall, Sears Auto has announced a closing sale at its 15 remaining auto centers. SearsAuto.com says it affects locations in California, Colorado, Texas, Florida, and New York. Sears opened the Woodfield store in 1971. While we're seeing higher gas prices here, have you ever paid $4.68 for a gallon of gas? Perhaps $5? That's the reality for California drivers, now seeing the highest average price ever in the state. Gas Buddy reports prices around Chicago averaging $3.25 a gallon. A ribbon-cutting ceremony today for the Sunnyside Dispensary and Cresco Labs in Wrigleyville. Cresco, wholesaler of branded cannabis products, opens the Sunnyside flagship location only steps away from Wrigley Field. I'm Dave Schwann, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah. You and Elise were talking about the Thanksgiving dinner earlier and the preparation of that, and I have on Friday a game-changing recipe for mashed potatoes. Friday on in this space on Friday.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Before you go, okay. I know you're busy. Friday, mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes. Game-changing recipe.
All right, and I will have a game changer myself. We'll carve out, no pun intended, a little time on the Friday business lunch. All right, Steve, keep going.
Okay. Care to invest in a restaurant, John? It may not be seem like a great time to do it, but there are some people who are doubling down in the restaurant business, including Shaquille O'Neal. He is posting up the competition in the chicken chain business. Shaq started a chain called Big Chicken, with one in Vegas, another in Glendale, California, and more recently in hockey arenas of the Seattle Kraken and the New York Islanders, and on Carnival cruises, too. He has also partnered with Ghost Kitchens to make Big Chicken available without brick-and-mortar stores. And he is now franchising Big Chicken, and you can get in, too, if you have, between $500,000 and $1 million to invest, plus a $40,000 franchise fee. One of the sandwiches on the Big Chicken menu is called the Charles Barkley, which comes with mac and cheese on top of the chicken, along with crispy onions and a spicy Shaq sauce. Shaq has dabbled in other parts of the food business, including owning a Krispy Kreme franchise. He was brought in by the board of directors of Papa John's to try to help repair the company's image after the former CEO resigned because of racially disparaging comments. Other sports stars have invested in food. Magic Johnson has owned over 100 Starbucks locations, some TGI Fridays, and more than 20 Burger Kings. Former NBA player Junior Bridgman bought numerous Chili's and Wendy's franchises while he was playing. Sold them all for $400 million in 2016. One more thing about Shaq's business acumen. During his playing career, he made over $280 million on the court. Off the court, he made more than double that. At the Chicago Board of Trade, last week was rally week for corn, beans, and wheat. Wheat was the star, gaining, about 54 cents a bushel, about 7%. Corn added 4.2%. Beans picked up 3.2% for the week. Right now, corn is down 3 cents, beans are up 13, and wheat is trading about 4 cents higher. From the farm to your belly, today is National Bundt Cake Day. It's also National Raisin Bran Cereal Day. By the way, day 41 of the Kellogg strike. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Okay, Amy, so talk to me about travel.
Yeah, certainly. So the TSA said that it's already screening between 1.9 and 2.2 million per day. So they're seeing this big jump already happening. AAA said that it predicts about 53.4 million people will be traveling during that Thanksgiving window, so like the 24th through the 28th. That's 13%. That's a 13% increase from 2020 levels. So we're kind of starting to already see this boost. But it's in the middle of also seeing a surge in gas prices. We see rental car prices are remaining very high because of semiconductor chips and cars and like in the fleet. They don't have access to as many new vehicles. So I'm sure there will probably be some headaches. So if you are traveling over Thanksgiving, leave early, plan for the unexpected, things like that. But I'll be watching that really closely, particularly I think airlines are really kind of banking on this holiday season to help them recover some revenue that they lost during the pandemic. So I think it'll be very interesting to see the kind of this sudden surge amid all these issues you and I
often talk about. Yeah, I assume she's still there, right? Yeah, she's just kind of cut out there. Hold on a second, Amy, you're sort of burping on the phone. Let me just go to the next story. Congress mandates new car technology to stop drunken driving. Remember when Nancy Pelosi once said we have to pass the bill to see what's in there? Who knew all of the things that were in this infrastructure bill? And among them, that by 2026, according to the Transportation Department, new vehicles will have to have monitoring systems to stop intoxicated drivers. If I'm reading that correctly, that's within the next 4 or 5 years, new vehicles will have to have some sort of drunk driver detection system. Is that your read on this?
Yeah, certainly. That's exactly it. And it's part of the new infrastructure package to put some technology into cars. So this would start, as you said, this would start in 2026 and be part of the Transportation Department's push to try to combat drunken driving.
Well, that's amazing to me. I mean, I don't know exactly how they're going to do that. Some people who are convicted of DUIs in order to get back in their vehicles to go to work have to blow into a device that measures the blood alcohol level, and then the car is operable or not. I don't know if it's going to be something like right. that, though. Have they said what the technology is going to be, or is it up to the manufacturers?
They haven't said yet. I think that's what a lot of people are kind of waiting on. Would it be sort of like a breathalyzer, an interlock device that's in some cars if someone has already, you know, been convicted of a DUI? Would it be that kind of device? Would it be something else that would kind of passively monitor the performance of driving to note when you're driving differently or, you know, in a different way than you normally are? There's a lot of different, you know, approaches to that. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out. But that's a pretty short timeline. That's pretty ambitious to have that in new cars by 2026. So I think that'll be something to watch for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. And then will it know the difference between driving while drunk and driving while texting? And maybe it won't care. Talk to me about Boeing and what's the news in China.
Yeah, so Boeing says that it is encouraged that China might soon clear the 737 MAX to fly. That just, I think, about a week ago, you and I were talking about this. China is a huge market for Boeing. It is a giant, giant market, a lot of air travel happening, and they have a lot of orders that have kind of been suspended. It has been that aircraft has been grounded for more than 2.5 years. So that's, you know, long after the U.S. cleared it, long after the European markets cleared it, that the Chinese regulators have still kind of been sitting on this. So they've opened some public comment. There'll be a period of public comment that's going to kind of precede this to see what happens next. But that's usually a pretty good signal that perhaps that will open. So that would be a very significant piece for Boeing. And of course, Wall Street responded to that. We saw about 2.6% a bump there in pre-market trading after that comment. You know, so it's all about the Civil Aviation Administration of China, and so they're going to do this request, this comment period. We'll see what happens after that. But if that clears, that's a huge, you know, boom for Boeing. That is the last remaining market for them that hasn't been cleared after the two crashes that grounded it worldwide. China has really been very, very slow to move on that. So we shall see what happens there.
And lastly, Johnson & Johnson is splitting into two companies. Will they be called Johnson & Johnson?
I know. That's exactly what I thought, too. Is it Johnson and then also Johnson? We don't know yet, but they're going to focus on consumer products. And then another part of the company will be prescription drugs and medical devices. So this is very similar to what we saw last week from GE. Mm-hmm. You know, we did not see this, you know, humongous company that at one point was one of the most powerful companies in the world. We really kind of didn't see that coming. But to me, this kind of hints at how investors have more of an appetite right now for focus than they do kind of this general kind of broad sweeps. So they're going to, so that split will be very interesting. I don't know that it will necessarily impact the Johnson & Johnson products that we use. I mean, how we interact with them and how the company looks, other than, you know, on paper, they will be two different companies.
Good to hear. Okay, let's stay in touch. Thank you, Amy Guth.
Thanks so much.